and welcome to another monthly edition of the Student Press Law Center podcast. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. The SPLC is an advocate for student voices. We help young people learn, understand, and use the law to do great journalism and to gather and share ideas. The SPLC is online at www.splc.org, and we invite and encourage you to check out all the educational resources we have for you. Well, the Student Press Law Center is about student voices, and in fact, we ran a campaign a few years back called the Tomorrow's Voices Campaign. But the great thing about student voices is that young people are not waiting for tomorrow to make themselves heard. Around the country, across campuses from coast to coast, people are making themselves heard right now on the issues that concern them, whether it be the environment, immigration reform, the high cost of tuition. And with us to talk about the power and the importance of student voices is Zach Malamud, who started an organization called Student Voice. It is online at stuvoice.org, stuvoice.org, and we encourage you to check their website out. Zach is a sophomore at the University of Maryland at College Park. He's the founder and executive director of Student Voice, a really exciting young organization in every sense of the word, young in its history and young in its ideas and its staffing and leadership. So, Zach, welcome and thanks for joining us. And let's just dive in and tell us first about you, how you came to this life of activism and how Student Voice came to be.
Sure. Thanks for having me this morning, Frank. So I guess to just start with a quick little recap of, the Student Voice story and I guess my story as well. I grew up in Long Island, New York. I was high school president after three unsuccessful tries that finally worked out the last try. So I had really gotten a taste for what Student Voice was like, and I also just got a bit of an understanding of how Student Voice could be inhibited within the school environment. And so I started to engage myself in conversations around education policy. Around that time, the New York State Education Reform Commission had formed, and being a New Yorker, I wanted to make sure that Student Voice had a presence there. They formed a commission to reform education in the state of New York, and obviously, because it makes so much sense, they didn't include the Student Voice in the commission whatsoever. They include every other stakeholder except the stakeholder who's actually being impacted by the decisions that they're making. Because, that's how education policy making has been working for so long.
Right. So the customer's always wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But things are changing, and that's in large part due to the fact that students are organizing. But despite the fact that students are organizing, I also see the youth organizing space as maybe the most disorganized industry that there is, because we're all doing so many great things, but in so many different ways, and we're not very well connected. And I think social media really provides a platform for us to connect in ways that we've never been able to do so before. So to backtrack a little bit, I've been fairly active on Twitter with a friend of mine and an education activist, Nikhil Goyal. We've been engaging ourselves in education conversations. And what I noticed is that on Twitter, there are three big communities: Justin Bieber fans, NRA members, and the education community. Of course, I'm generalizing a bit there, but in recognizing that, I saw the great presence that educators had and the dedication that they had towards continuing the conversation around improving the education climate in the United States and beyond. But there was no real place for students. And when Nikhil and I started to join those conversations, it came as a bit of a surprise to them. So with that said, I only had a couple, 200 followers or so, but after attending a few conferences and getting myself involved in these conversations, I reached out to the folks at Dell, the computer company, and said, you guys have a couple hundred thousand followers, if not more than that. Would you be able to at least help us promote this chat to get it started? And it took off. I mean, we had presidential candidates, journalists, educators, and most importantly, students taking part in these chats. So I guess leveled the playing field in this conversation, where instead of it being a top-down conversation, you really could, although virtually, speak face-to-face with some very influential figures. And it's been going on since May 7th, 2012, just so happened to be Teacher Appreciation Day, so we're about a year and a half now. And just 2 weeks ago, we had U.S. Secretary of Education Ernie Duncan on the chat.
That was really a coup. I mean, to get that kind of recognition, that was amazing, yeah.
It was exciting to see the students engage in this dialogue. with the Secretary of Education. Many of them asking very, very intelligent questions that, you know, you don't really even hear brought up in the quote-unquote adult conversation or the higher-up level conversation. But every event I attend, every conversation I see take place on education that involves students, always is the highlight of every event and always is the most eye-opening. The problem is there isn't much action taken on that. It's just the students expressing their voice and kind of lending a bit of credibility to whatever it is that the event is trying to achieve. So we really need to authenticate the student's voice. So what we did with the success of the Twitter chats is we formulated at the time a website, StuVoice.org, as you had mentioned earlier, going off of the hashtag StuVoice, the Twitter chat that we run every Monday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that website is formulating into a place where we can both showcase the student voice stories, the success stories of students, teachers, parents, et cetera, all working to make sure that students have a stronger, more amplified voice in the education policy or education arena, period. And also serves to connect those stories, connect individuals who are acting on similar initiatives or hope to learn from others who have been more successful or less successful in those initiatives, just through storytelling. And then also showcase the student voice opinions. I mean, we've got thousands of readers every month at the very least, and millions of people that we are able to reach on Twitter through these weekly dialogues. I like to call it one of the best free marketing tools there is, but it is not easy to build a platform like that. It's taken quite a while. But the website really, really has helped us to really understand the power that student voice has and the power that storytelling can have in shaping such an important conversation. And, you know, that led to the creation of Student Voice Live, the in-person event for this online community, helped to formulate. I worked with about 30 kids from across the country who I'd never met before, in large part, to create an event in New York City. We also had satellite events in 22 countries across six continents to really just give students the opportunity to interact with influential stakeholders, even their own teachers, you know, with support of corporations, government entities, and so on and so forth. It really felt like the start of a new student voice movement. You know, you haven't really seen a large organized movement of students since probably, you know, around the civil rights era, or at least nothing.
Sure, or Vietnam, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And you really haven't, and now students have an outlet to organize. And while we may not be organizing on the ground, despite the fact that there are hundreds of student protests every year, and that's documented, we aren't organizing in the same fashion that they did on a national level back in the, you know, Vietnam civil rights era. But we are organizing in a similar fashion online, and that's not to be discounted. But to bring that together in person was invaluable and led to the formation of our nonprofit that now serves to amplify, aggregate through connections, and also accelerate student voices everywhere.
Exciting
time.
It's exciting to see something that started really with no budget, no staff, no nothing, just literally as a Twitter chat in the imagination of a couple of creative people has taken hold and has turned into an actual organization. Let me get you to go back over something you mentioned, which was during your own high school experience, you observed that there were obstacles, barriers that people encountered trying to engage and make themselves heard. I mean, talk a little bit about that. What have you observed are sort of those barriers to entry, and how do we address those?
Well, you know, in many ways, it's actually a two-way street. And retrospectively, I look at it and I say, you know, students don't really value their voices as much as they should. As much as, you know, others in the community don't value our voices, we don't really realize the impact it can have and the importance of exercising our own voices. And you know, standing up for what we believe in, no matter what anyone else may say. Because there's a reason we think what we think. And even if we're not always right, because no one's always right, it doesn't mean that our voice doesn't have value and there's not some reason as to why we came to that conclusion or came to have that opinion. And that helps people to better contextualize how to address issues and create change that's much more effective and efficient. So in recognizing the fact that, you know, retrospectively, I wish I had pushed more for certain things. I wish that I did not listen to some administrators who had told me to back down from certain things or that some things wouldn't change. Had I just pushed, the student voice is maybe one of the most powerful, not maybe, it is the most powerful, I think, organized voice that there could possibly be. If you look at any time when students have actually effectively organized, that gets the most attention out of almost any other kind of organization on the ground to really mobilize people to act on issues. Any great world-changing, you know, social change movement, whatever it is, always young people. You never see a bunch of people, you know, who are advocating for change in such a grassroots fashion with all gray hair everywhere. So, you know, that doesn't happen.
Right.
And whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, or on the ground, you got a bunch of young high school students, college students. Those are the people who are the activists who are actually advocating for the most radical but also sensible change. Because I think that the best change and the most powerful change is when the students come together with, you know, their elders and, you know, their educators and their parents and agree on an issue. It's the young people that actually see the possibility and the reason for change at first. But when they actually begin to collaborate with the adults in the field and the adults in their lives, you know, that's when you really start to see that sensible but yet radical change take place. And looking back on my student government experience, there wasn't the same adult support from an administrative level, from the community level, as I think there should be. There wasn't the same collaboration, and it wasn't putting the student voices first. It was, how does the student voice support what we're doing? And rather than allowing the students to take the lead, it's the students following what the board of education wants to do or what the administrators want to do. And there are very few examples of anything other than that. I'll give quickly one example of where students actually do have full voting rights on the Board of Education. That's in Anne Arundel County, Maryland. And right now there's actually a bill in the Maryland House, I believe, the Assembly, to get rid of the students' full voting rights. So one of the only, if not the only, Board of Education position in the country where a student has full voting rights is already being attacked. After students had fought for that a few decades ago, I think it was back in the 60s, now it's being attacked. And that shows that not only do we need to, you know, advocate for our rights, we also need to protect our existing rights. Because, you know, there is so much power when we organize, and if we actually leverage this, you know, social media outlet, the social media outlets that we have and the connections that we're able to form through that, I truly believe that we're on to maybe some of the greatest change our education system has seen in decades, if not centuries. And it's going to be because of the students.
So certainly schools and colleges don't always make an inviting space for young people to contribute their ideas, but there's also an issue about motivating, I guess, and organizing young people to kind of get off the couch and engage, right? You know, you happen to be and especially and Nikhil Goyal, especially sort of motivated, well-informed, energetic and engaged people, but do you think that the sort of, you know, the guy who's in school studying to be an engineer, the woman who's in pre-med school, that they're hungering to get engaged in policy making and that they're looking for an outlet to do that, or are they just sort of keeping their head down and trying to pay their bills and get a good job? And I guess secondary to that, I mean, do you think that is the job of people like you to actually get those people off the couch or not? Is that a mission? Is that a role that an organization like a Student Voice can play?
I think that actually, you know, there is an opening for more of these students to get involved. But to say that, you know, they're going to be the first to jump at getting involved, you know, I'd be silly to say something like that because, frankly, they have. I have a few roommates actually as engineering students, and I don't even know if they ever, put their head to the pillow. They're always working, and they're working really, mm-hmm. really hard. And, just to put it in an educational context, I like to say that from a liberal arts, you know, social, you know, science standpoint, if you don't work outside of the classroom, you're not going to get a job. If you're studying the natural sciences, if you don't study, you're not going to graduate. So that's how difficult it is to actually mobilize, you know, the natural science students, the engineering students, and so on and so forth. That said, they also, you know, every student is worried about an issue like tuition. every student is worried about more STEM opportunities on that side of the educational spectrum. And STEM is obviously one of the hottest issues in education today. But from my perspective, if it's not sexy, I'm not interested. And that's the same for all students. The issues need to be sexy. And I don't think that framing everything in a policy, from a policy perspective, is the best way of making an issue sexy.
Sure.
I think it's more about making the issue personal. I'll give you an example. At Student Voice Live, it wasn't just about us getting the head of unions, the U.S. Department of Education, and corporations involved. It was also about bringing in the celebrities that people have watched on television and have admired, and the celebrities who are actually acting to create much of the change that the students desire. Bringing them in into the fold and helping them, bringing them into the fold to help motivate some of the students who may not be motivated otherwise. So there are a lot of creative ways that, you know, we can start to mobilize students who may not typically be those who would get involved in these issues. So Student Voice, I think, in many respects, does do that. I mean, actually, at least a quarter, if not a half, of our staff are computer science majors or engineers or something along those lines. And you wouldn't expect those to be the ones who are mobilizing. So the way Student Voice, I believe, is approaching it, it is more, we're more likely to engage the folks who aren't, you know, the social activists. Because we're taking a different approach. It's not all about signing petitions and working on the ground. It's about making something cool out of this, giving people opportunities through this movement, and also making them realize how they can benefit their own education and their future through actually exercising their voices. So making that personal is so critical. Otherwise, you know, if it's just about marching in the streets and signing petitions, that's kind of not something that you're really going to see motivate the entire spectrum of students. That said, when you really bring together the adults and the students and move a movement like this forward, that's when everyone's going to start marching in the streets and doing whatever it takes to actually create change. But you got to create a why, a reason for people to get involved. And they don't see that in the student movement right now. They don't see much of a reason because they aren't as engaged in reading up on all of the issues because, well, like I said, you know, they want to graduate first and foremost, but they also want to get the best education possible too. So making it personal is very critical.
Sure. No, that's really smart. Yeah, and also I think creating different levels of engagement, right? I mean, not everybody has
exactly
the time, the interest, the motivation to lock arms on the quad and get pepper sprayed, right? There are people who would be willing to engage at perhaps a less deeply invested level, and those people need that opportunity too. Maybe it's just as simple as participating in a Twitter chat, tweeting a question at a cabinet secretary, something like that. That only takes 30 seconds, but that can be real genuine engagement.
And then when you actually had a neighbor of mine who had never engaged in these conversations before, but she had seen all that I've been doing over the past couple of years and said, you know, why don't I just send a tweet out? And Arne Duncan responded to her tweet, and now she feels a connection to the movement. Now she feels like there's something that she can do to affect change within the education space just because Arne Duncan responded to one of her tweets. So those kind of opportunities that we're able to create for someone who doesn't really believe that their voice can create an impact or have an impact is what I think it helps to make this movement a bit sexier than maybe other movements would be. But let me also clarify, our movement's completely nonpartisan. All we do is advocate for students to actually have a voice and amplify those voices of students who are exercising their voice through our platform, because our belief is every student voice matters. Every student voice has, you know, they're saying something for a reason. So whether on the right side of the spectrum, the left side of the spectrum, or somewhere in between, you know, their voice has meaning and should be heard and should be a voice of influence in these conversations. So, you know, it's not like we're advocating for, you know, anything that you hear on one side of the spectrum or the other in education policy. It's about making sure that students who want to stand up and have a voice can have a voice.
Sure. That's a terrific role to play because, right, that is unique, not to be coming from an ideological perspective, but to be equally welcoming of all perspective and to just be about the engagement. I think that's a terrific role for you guys to be playing. Let me ask you to spend a minute and just explain to folks the resource that you have at StuVoice.org, the digital backpack, how you want people to use that. We were really pleased at SPLC to be able to contribute some content to that, and we're really delighted with how it came out. So I guess explain to folks what that resource is and how you hope they'll use it.
Likewise, Frank, I'm really happy that we can work with SPLC on that. You know, we we created the digital backpack in hopes that it could provide examples, case studies of how students can have a voice and understanding what student voice can look like. And I'm very proud of the outcomes. And actually, it's still a developing resource. It's not something that, you know, is just set in stone and isn't something that's going to evolve over time. We still are plan on continuing to develop, we are continuing to develop this resource, this digital backpack of tools for students to look at and say, all right, this is how this student's mobilizing on this issue. This is how I can do it and learn from this in my community. I want to connect with that student because that student's done something similar to what I want to do. Or, you know, that teacher really provided a great example of how to, you know, bring student voices into the classroom. I want to show this to my teacher and see if we can make this a part of my classroom experience. So that's generally speaking what the digital backpack is meant to serve. I did have one takeaway, though, one learning experience through that, is that we tried to show people how they can give students a voice. But we actually never had made the case, and no one had ever made the case, for why students should have a voice. And it's very difficult to show the how and have people adapt the how if they don't understand why it's so important and why it's so personal to them. So as we develop the how and continue to showcase how student voice can be seen and implemented, it's also very important, and this is our primary focus now, is to make the case for why. And so the digital backpack will always be a resource for how to actually affect change and actually exercise your voice. And it's for all teachers, students, that there are all different sections of the backpack, even parents, to actually look at it and see how they can, you know, help amplify, aggregate, and accelerate student voices everywhere. But keeping in mind that we all need to be evangelists for why student voice is important, as much as we look at how the why is so critical to this movement's success. And no one's really made that case yet. Although it seems obvious to us, you know, we live in a low-hanging fruit community of people who really believe in student voice, but the large majority of people aren't even thinking about student voice. That's something we need to change.
Yeah. Well, just in the minute or two that we have left, what is next for student voice? What is next for the organization, and what direction do you envision it evolving in?
Sure. So, you know, I look at the amplifying, aggregating, and accelerating points of what student voice is working on. From an amplification standpoint, you know, Twitter and Facebook have been social media platforms that we've been able to leverage very well to organize people and support other student movements, student-led initiatives, and also connect people in ways that they've never been connected before. It's an incredibly strong community. And, you know, the Twitter chats are so great because they bring that community together and also spread our voices and our message beyond just the community. So we're going to continue that. We're going to build upon that. Keep an eye out for us leveraging some social media platforms that you may not even see in the social change space right now, but definitely can be leveraged for such reasons. So we want to continue to build that amplification platform and that aggregation platform. But beyond just the digital space, we are going around the country over the next couple months hosting what we call Design Lounge events, where we'll go to different cities and bring stakeholders together, primarily students, of course, but other education stakeholders, to talk about ways that they can actually, you know, advocate for why student voice is important and also implement the how. Because these conversations are very important. If we don't start with these conversations, you know, we can't actually lead to result in action. And this is a conversation that largely hadn't existed before, or at least has not existed in a very long time. So we're, in large part, what student voice has been able to do is create a conversation that hasn't been around, and we're very proud of that. So we're going around the country to Austin, Texas. We'll be on the West Coast soon. We'll be in New York and D.C., going to various events to help continue this conversation. And then we'll also be hosting Student Voice Live again in September of 2014. Stay tuned for that. But that'll be a great global event. We'll be continuing to build that amplification platform for student voices. And then also in regards to the how, we're building case studies as to how student voice can be seen, can be implemented. And if you're out there and you feel like you have a great case study or a great example of what student voice looks like, we'd love to help build that case study and really help accelerate that case study and also highlight that when we start trying to connect you and others with people who desire to really bring student voice to life in their communities. So that's the acceleration stage, really building student-led initiatives, building the student voice presence across the country. And the thing is, the infrastructure already exists. We're just there to support the growth of that existing infrastructure. and help to really bring that to a national stage where student voices are a top priority, whether it be on a national or even international stage, in these education conversations. Because once we're there, then we'll really start to see that change and see these local and national organizations affecting the change that they all set out to achieve.
Fantastic. Well, let's need to wrap it up with that, but with one last plug and invitation for folks on Twitter on Monday evenings to join the Student Voice Twitter chats using the hashtag StuVoice. Do check out the Student Voice website. That's StuVoice.org. And we also hope you'll check out the resources we have available for you at www.splc.org. If you're a student with any question about your legal rights to gather, publish, and share information, give us a call, 703-807-1904, or drop us a line, splc@splc.org. Zach Malamud, the founder of Student Voice, thank you so much for joining us. It'll be really exciting to see what you and Student Voice do next. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next month.